Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Well, good day to you. Here's Richard Barter again in the Senior Focus slot. And as usual, I'm going to be talking about issues of transport. I've just had the great privilege of attending a conference in Dublin a couple of weeks ago. This is called Velo City. Velo being the word for bicycle, and city. It's all about cycling for transport rather than cycling for sport, and it is actually the biggest conference of its kind. And it is a great privilege. I don't go to these all the time, but every now and again, it's wonderful just to catch up on what people are thinking in all spheres of cycling for transport. There were about 1,500 people there. Not been to Dublin before. Maybe you have. There's a lot of growth happening in Dublin. Almost as many cranes along the River Liffey as there are in Auckland at the moment. And there's a lot of lovely new development happening. And a lot of it is really nicely done around the old historic city as well. We have been talking a little about autonomous vehicles in the last couple of weeks. I'm going to continue that conversation, and I'm basing much of my talk today on a presentation given at the conference by Ceri Walsgroves, and they had an interesting take on autonomous vehicles, and we'll be covering some of the things we've talked about in the past. And the title of his presentation was Opportunities and Threats of Autonomous Vehicles to Other Modes in Urban Areas. Now, as we've talked about in the past, autonomous vehicles are seen by many as being a very attractive way to deal with many of the issues that we face today. Clearly, there are interests at heart there. A lot of the car manufacturers realise that the way they've done things in the past, it has to change. Certainly, there are safety advantages of having sensors and the likes to protect us as we drive and potentially protect others. While I was away, I did have the privilege of spending a day out in a London lorry in the middle of London, driving around all of the thousands and thousands of tourists and cyclists. And this lorry was equipped with all the mod cons to keep those pedestrians and cyclists who were just wandering across the road, the pedestrians looking at their phones and not looking up at what was happening on the road. And likewise, we saw tourists on the Boris bikes pedalling along, looking at their phones and not at all being concerned about the fact that other people were using the road. But this lorry had a little device called Mobile Eye, which was able to predict it plotted the path of the pedestrian or the cyclist and of the truck, and if it looked like the two paths would converge, which is not a good thing for anyone, it put up this little alarm on the correct side that this problem was likely to occur. One of the problems about sensors in vehicles is that some of you may have cars that when you're backing up, you hear this little beep, 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 which senses a object or something behind you so that you know you're getting close. And the problem with those sensors is that they don't distinguish between a warm body and a piece of roading infrastructure like a lamppost or something like this. And this is a problem for drivers, particularly where they are fitted to heavy vehicles. And they end up getting a lot of what's called false positives. And these false positives can often result in the driver simply turning it off or disconnecting it. The nice thing about the mobile eye setup was that it only, I'm not sure how it did it, but it only picked up on a warm body. And this meant that as I saw the thing in operation, it was very good in terms of these false alarms. It just didn't have false alarms. So there are a lot of good things going on about vehicle technology. People believe that driverless cars will reduce accidents by around 90% and reduce pollution. They believe carbon emissions will drop because urban driverless cars will be electric. The old, the disabled and teenagers potentially can suddenly gain mobility because they don't need to drive them. Driverless cars will hardly ever need to park, and certainly not in city centres. These are all statements that are in support of autonomous vehicles. They go on to say congestion will diminish as driverless cars can drive in dense packs and won't get lost and won't have to circle around looking for parking. And lastly, once driverless cars spread beyond urban centres, the tedium of the commutes will go. So there are opportunities. Autonomous vehicles do have safety programmed into them. The question is asked, will the distraction, will speeding, will drink driving be a thing of the past? Technically, autonomous vehicles would know what the speed limit is for any given area and not go above it. I suppose you could possibly override these things. If you don't have to drive it, is it a problem that you've been drinking? Again, the biggest trouble we have today with, in terms of cause of accidents, is distraction. But if you don't have to be looking at the road, maybe that'll be less of a problem. There's certainly, as I've talked about in the past, there's the possibility for traffic management. Potentially, we could give advantages to buses and light rail if we wanted to reduce congestion. And lastly, of course, it's not only cars that would be autonomous. There's certainly, I've been on trains and in some countries, which we've spoken about before, that don't have drivers. Potentially, we could have autonomous buses and trains as well. And just very quickly, going on over the five steps to full automation, we start with a lot of our cars today with no automation whatsoever. The first one, the first level, which I've often called no feet, is the vehicle is controlled by the driver, but many cars today we have assistance for braking. If it can, has the cars are fitted with little radars, and if the car in front stops suddenly, it will brake quickly. If the lane departure warnings are something which is increasingly common on days today. Some of the, in the next stage is no hands, and some of these lane departure warnings will actually steer the car back onto the road. And you could argue that if the car can drive in the lane without with that sort of feature, you perhaps don't need to have your hands on. The third level we call no eyes. And this is where all of those things we've talked about are just more advanced, where potentially the driver does not need to be looking all the time. because the level of technology is such that, in fact, the car will manage a lot of these things. The fourth level is when there is a seat for the driver with a steering wheel and the controls, but in reality, the driver does not have to control the vehicle. And lastly, of course, fully autonomous vehicles that don't have a place for the driver at all. And there are a few of these around, little shuttle buses. I know they're trialling some at Christchurch Airport. We're going to have a little listen to one of those lovely old songs. I remember listening to this first as a boy back in the early 60s in Rotorua. It's Danny Boy. Here we go, Danny Boy. I remember at the old, I can't remember the name of the building, but it's that old historic building in a big, beautiful park in downtown Rotorua that was a restaurant. I think today it's largely under restoration, but I remember that was my first time ever hearing jazz music being played as a young lad there on our summer holidays. Danny Boy. Okay, So we're carrying on with the question of autonomous vehicles, and in particular the way they relate to pedestrians and cyclists. And there's a little quote here from the chief executive of Renault, the car manufacturer Renault, Carlos Ghosn. And he said, one of the biggest problems with autonomous vehicles is people with bicycles. The car is confused by cyclists because from time to time they behave like pedestrians and from time to time they behave like cars. And he goes on to say they, in other words cyclists, don't respect any rules usually. There you go. There's a bit of a challenge, isn't it? So this whole idea of how do you keep pedestrians and cyclists safe around autonomous vehicles is something that is yet to be solved. You know, there aren't that many autonomous vehicles on the road, but we have heard of instances where tragedies have occurred and pedestrians in particular have been run over. Currently about 70% of cars have one driver out on the road at any one time. And the question of whether congestion will be solved by autonomous vehicles is one that's not that easy to answer. So if you don't have your own car and you perhaps use a application on your phone to call up a car, like you might do with a taxi or an Uber, for those of you that use Ubers. If that happens to be in the future autonomous vehicles with no drivers, you could argue that actually there's going to be an awful lot of empty cars driving around looking for the people they're about to pick up. So the question of congestion being solved by cars is I think, yet to be answered. And the same is with the issues of parking. These, in order to provide the sort of level of service, these cars can't be running all the time. They will need to stop, and where will they go? Maybe they can head out of town and park somewhere. What will this mean for the authorities that run the car parking facilities? We've talked before about this problem of induced demand by creating easier ways to drive around. We know that when you've got a lot of costs related to congestion, building roads can reduce those congestion costs. But of course, typically what happens is the roads get used more and you end up going in this unfortunate circle. And so the issue of seeing autonomous cars as the answer to that, again, is not easily answered. Now, I don't know if you've seen some of these visionary images of people in autonomous vehicles, fully autonomous vehicles. These are ones that don't necessarily have the traditional driver's seats, but I'm looking at an image of a car with a couple kind of looking like they're in a small lounge. They're sitting back in easy chairs, they're watching a big screen, enjoying a movie while they are being driven along in great comfort. And of course, if those opportunities exist, then the reason for living close to where you work could actually be harder to support. If a long commute could be a very pleasurable experience, well, this could actually lock in the demand for living a long way away, and that can end up in increasing sprawl. I went to a Auckland Conversation event last night, which was looking at density, living in cities, and the advantages and the issues around living in a dense city. And we know that the growth in Auckland is hoping to be achieved, 70% of it within the city boundaries and only 30% of it outside of the city boundaries. The problem with the new housing areas outside is that they don't have any infrastructure, and including public transport. And so I know the authorities are keen to make sure that the public transport options are there before the houses are put up. But this whole kind of concept of how we get around traditionally has not seen distance as a problem, because people manage it in their cars, and this idea that autonomous vehicles might solve that, again, has to be questions. They also could potentially threaten the efficiency and the profitability of public transport systems. Likewise, I spoke last time about this concept of mobility as a service. This is where, with the applications that are available on phones and the like these days, you might choose to your destination and from where you're living, and you might use a number of different ways to get to that destination. You might walk a little bit, you might take a bus, then a ferry, and some of you may even want to ride an e-scooter for a bit, and then to get to your final destination using those different approaches. The idea of autonomous vehicles could in fact disrupt the profitability and the effectiveness of that whole idea of mobility as a service and public transport. Now, safety, is it really being solved? My son lives in Los Angeles, and he has heard of friends of his, because there are quite a few autonomous vehicles there. They're pretty obvious, really, at the moment. On their roof, they have these big array of cameras and sensors. Usually they will have somebody in the car, but some of his unruly friends like to play chicken with these cars, and they do this having a pretty good sense that the sensors in the cars will actually force them to stop and move out of the way. And so there's a question, will autonomous vehicles be bullied out on the road? If one gets used to the idea, and again, we've got these multiple steps towards full autonomy, until we're all the way there, one could envisage a problem with this idea that if we think that the car will correct itself if we cross the white line, maybe we won't concentrate as hard as we should, given the stage of autonomy that our vehicle is in. So that's an issue which we're yet to really understand what the implications are. The other thing is the regulations. It's all unknown territory, and very good regulation is going to be required. There's the question of behavioural regulation. How do we learn to manage these things? Drivers need to know and understand the limitations of these vehicles, and there needs to be good communication between drivers. There are still a lot of things to be sorted out there. Hey, we've just got a few minutes left, but I'd love to listen to, with you, this track, Stormy Weather, given we've got in the middle of winter here, I'm back after the European summer. Let's listen to now Stormy Weather. Go. What a wonderful old-time track, Stormy Weather. Hey, we've been talking about autonomous vehicles and how they may interact with cyclists. We've been talking about the fact that as our populations increase, we've got to think about the way we do transport. Decreasing car ownership is likely to happen, but are autonomous vehicles the way of the future? Hey, it's been lovely talking to you today. And I know some of these things might be a little bit contentious. Sending me an email, richard@path.net.nz, is a good way to ask questions and maybe comment on the things that we've been talking about. Hey, I look forward to seeing you next time when we continue to talk about transport in this senior citizen slot. I hope the rest of your week goes well. Lovely to talk to you today. Goodbye for now.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/seniorfocus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.